beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 114C. We've been looking at this complicated, intricate mathematics that no life within our solar system can fathom, just sense its significance. And we wonder whether that includes the solar logos, the mathematical underpinning of the great intricate beauty of cosmos is thereby indicated. So it expands our sense of wonder and of awe, and perhaps inclines us to study mathematics with greater care, knowing that it will be of great value in terms of esoteric interpretation. There is a whole esoteric branch of mathematics. So certain cosmic events governed by a great law of expediency, which comes in under the third ray, I would guess, evoked by the evolutionary process and incident also to zodiacal movement and its own interior mathematical conditioning. Presumably the mathematical conditioning is related to the zodiacal movement. We have to remember that not only may constellations move as a whole, but they move as a whole because the individual stars within them have their own type of motion and direction and change of relationships. Maybe those motions are actually dictated by the constellational lord, the lord of the constellation, and only partially by the solar logoi who inform the stars themselves. It's just wonder and amazement, and we human beings limit our apprehension so much. We limit our world for the sake of security and because of fear, and as a result, the incredible wonder of cosmos is not realized in any significant measure. We don't think it's our responsibility to realize such things. We leave that to God, you know, as if there's just God and man. It is a hopelessly short-sighted picture. We have to hierarchicalize our perception of the cosmos and understand relatively what we human beings have perceived compared to what there is to perceive. So no life within our solar system can do more than sense the significance of this cosmic mathematics which determines the zodiacal movements, or which is the means by which the Lord of the Constellation determines this zodiacal movement. Constant mutation is at work, what we call the circle of the 12 constellations. It's only a circle as appears to us, of course. It is, some are much farther away and some much closer, and even within constellations there are stars that are, suppose we have a constellation whose most of the stars of which seem relatively close, there may be stars in that constellation which are so far away that they are far beyond the boundary of constellations still farther away than the one we have been considering. So we don't have the perspective yet from which to see the arrangement. Says, number four here, the statements made by me in this attempt, for it is little more, to indicate the main lines of approach to the new science of esoteric astrology, the main lines of approach, which includes, of course, esoteric astronomy, may not yet be capable of proof. Well, they really are not capable of proof, so many of the things here said. Later on, such proof will be available, and there is a vague couple of words, later on. It could be centuries, it could be millennia, it could be Platonic ages. Especially when I read somewhere that the kind of material that was given in the treatise on cosmic fire would be of interest during the earlier part of the fifth round, of broader interest, and set into textbook form in the later part of the fifth round. Even assuming that this is a chain round, we're looking ahead perhaps 300 million years or more. So you realize that what DK has presented to us is far ahead of our time in many respects, and it's part of the fast track that includes the attempt to achieve initiation, whereas the mass of human beings may rise more or less together without any such focused attempt. It is a great treasure of anticipation that we are being given here. We can anticipate structures, happenings, relationships that are far beyond the consideration of the average personality-centered individual today. In this, of course, is no cause for pride, it's a cause for humility. We may one day be able to fathom more completely what is given, but certainly more rapidly than if we had not been presented with the possibility. All that I can ask of you at this time is to be interested in the presentation, and some couldn't even manage that. Some fine astrologers in their own right couldn't even manage a real interest in this presentation because it was too far for them beyond the pale, beyond the boundaries they had set for the legitimate study of astrology. All I can ask of you at this time is to be interested in the presentation, to strive to see the general picture I am seeking to present. Well, maybe we can do that, and maybe the commentaries can help a little, and to grasp somewhat the relative synthesis which underlies all manifestation. Doesn't seem too much to ask, does it? Certainly it is fascinating what he is presenting, and even though it's general and non-specific in a way, it does open us up to a picture of cosmos which is far greater than what we had anticipated. I mean, the astrophysics of today, the astronomy of today, can reveal a vast universe, but what of the subjectivity of this universe? And what of the real psychological and spiritual, not just physical, relations between the factors which the telescope reveals? This, we have to rely upon occultism and spiritual esotericism to reveal. Starting from that which is today accepted, be willing to move on from there into new fields of possibility and of sensed probability. It's impending. Probability is that which is likely to occur, to manifest, and one can begin to sense the approach of the probable to some degree of manifestation. Time will justify the information I ask you to accept as hypothesis. And of course, there is an act of faith here, no question about it. Some people do not want to rely upon a master such as DK. Well, he wouldn't want us to rely upon him either. He would just want us to at least have an open mind and to realize that his intention is good and his knowledge is vast, and he can probably save us lifetimes of stumbling around following our own limited ideas. Everything on this planet is known by the central source of our planet, and so it goes with our solar system and beyond. And some there are who are in line for the downflow or inflow of some of this information, and they seek to pass it on as it may be useful to such as we are, not just to clog our heads with useless information, but to give us a new appreciation of the grandeur, the glory, the beauty, the intricacy of the cosmos in which we live, even our planet, even our planetary system, even our local cosmos. The wider universe, of course, is more remarkable, but there is so much of amazement even in our local cosmic scene. Next, I will deal with an analysis of three groups of triangles. Well, what do we have so far? We have the Great Triangle, which is the Great Bear, Sirius and Pleiades, and analogous to the Great Bear, Little Bear and Pleiades, which may be even more cosmic in its implications, with Sirius perhaps being a a step down. I think if we could relate the Ajna Center to the solar plexus in man, we'd understand something more about the relationship of the little bear to the constellation or star Sirius. So analysis of three groups of triangles which are of major importance to humanity at this time and which follow up on the information earlier given. I mean, we have been given a lot about the science of triangles, actually, even in the first two parts of the book. I sometimes refer to the section of the book up to page 404 as the first part, but I think it's really divided into two parts, the introduction and then the second being a section on the astrological signs themselves and their relationships to humanity and to each other. These groups of triangles emanate energies which reach through space to the individual man and therefore cannot be ignored. I'm sure there are many triangles which are very effective with regard to planets and suns and even other constellations, but they are not of immediate moment to us. But whatever impacts us and changes our life, then that we have to take into consideration. So then let us look at these factors that do affect the individual man. So much of our causality is, a sense of causality is very limited. I want to make these maybe a little bit smaller. This is going to be one of those places where, yeah, we can make this maybe down to size 10. We might be able to align them better as they are in the book. So here's Pisces. Here's Leo, Capricorn, Pisces. Notice that that he does, interestingly, always list the Pleiades second and Sirius third. As I said before, there's a strong monastic content to Sirius, but in this case it's going to be as a representative of the second aspect. I've given a lot of attention to this particular sixfold progression, which has got 18 members in it altogether, I do believe. No, that's not it. Excuse me. It's this. There we go. And from the disciples, head center to the disciples, Ajna center, and to the disciples, heart. Okay. And then on, eventually controlled by, and this we have to make as well, and eventually controlled, not by, but eventually controlled. If we go to number 10, yes, we'll have that. Well, this is a interesting and important series of triangles affecting humanity today, and it all starts from the primary three. I don't know why he doesn't list the little bear. Probably, as I say, because of the great importance that Sirius has for our particular system. The Great Bear, the Pleiades, Sirius, transmit energy via Leo, Capricorn, and Pisces, two first-ray constellations and Pisces, but Leo is correlated here with the Great Bear, and Capricorn has a third-ray component to it, and Pisces a second-ray component. So, in fact, the way he's arranged these, and sometimes he arranges them differently, the same groups of three, Sirius is transmitting the second ray primarily, and, of course, Pisces is a receiver of the second ray. These transmit energy via Saturn, which has its first ray component, Mercury, which certainly has its third ray component, and Uranus, which is strangely connected to the second ray here, connected to ray 2. Amazingly, it does connect with the heart, and the heart has both the first and second ray aspect working through it. It is magnetic and attractive, as is the second ray, and it is controlling and setting the rhythm and radiant, as is the first ray. And it reaches the following centers: the Planetary Head Center, Shambhala, Planetary Ajna Center, which is the new group of world servers. And so we see an important line of descent involving the new group of world servers on the planetary heart, and this will go to the individual man, where we have the disciples' head center, the disciples' Ajna center, and the disciples' heart center. And I think I just better reduce that to the number 10. And finally, to the base of the spine center, the throat center. Base of the spine center is a center of will, whereas the crown center is a center of purpose. So the first ray is found there, the throat center, along the third ray line, and the solar plexus, interestingly enough, along the second ray line. When we descend via the Pleiades, we realize it eventually reaches the new group of world servers, and that should not be surprising, because if we descend via the Pleiades, we're going to have to, in a sense, come through the constellation Taurus, which in fact rules the new group of world servers at this time. Interestingly enough, on the way down from Sirius, we run into Pisces and Uranus, but this is the hierarchy. The planetary heart is the hierarchy, and Uranus rules Aquarius, which rules the planetary hierarchy, so that makes sense as well. Mercury sometimes rules the Ajna center. I think it takes over the Venus function of the Ajna center at a certain point of initiation. It might be the third degree at which this happens. So that Uranus is not necessarily out of place, because it is so important for the Aquarianly ruled spiritual hierarchy of our planet. As far as the head center goes, well, you know, does Saturn really have to do with the head center per se? Leo does, in a way. It rules the dome of the head. Different parts of the head are ruled by different signs of the zodiac, and it is not without profit that one can study phrenology esoterically. From thence to the disciples' head center, disciples' Ajna center, and disciples' heart center, okay? And control eventually the base of the spine center. Head and base of the spine are to be connected, and that's Pluto down at the bottom, Pluto and Saturn, two planets of the first ray and of termination, we might almost say. The Ajna and the throat center are centers of intelligence, and the first aspect of creativity, or the first part of the creative process, begins in the throat center, but eventually it's guided by the process of visualization, which is ruled by the Ajna center. The heart and solar plexus are, of course, related. So in a way, you know, we can see the third ray line of force here, and something perhaps involving the first initiation. We see possibly the second, well, the first and, I don't know, maybe the first and third initiation involved in the central pillar, and then the second and fourth initiation involved in the Sirian line of descent. And here the disciples' head center and base of the spine, it seems to promote the fifth initiation. Leo is involved, and, well, that all works out, doesn't it? Leo is involved, and Leo is the fifth sign, which I think has a lot to do with the fifth initiation, which is called the illumination, and which we, or revelation, and Leo, being so connected with the sun, is a source of revelation and consciousness. And then Saturn rules the atomic plane. And the fifth degree initiate is at least, to a significant degree, focused on the atomic plane and knows the will of God, and so therefore can formulate the divine plan using Saturn. So there is an inner logic to this sixfold descent, or maybe it's a fivefold descent of three initial factors, but 18 in all, which is not an insignificant number. You know, it has a lot to do with the three lower worlds. The number of the three lower worlds is 18 or 9, And 9 is the number of the third ray and connected with the Pleiades, whose sources are 9, 7 plus 2. So there is an internal correspondential mathematical logic connected with all that is presented here by DK, but we don't, well, we just don't know the mathematics, do we? Not yet. If only our fragmentary educational system would point to the future of what these disciplines could be used for, I think we would find students to be far more eager and attentive and dedicated. I will also take up with you with this at some of the points and indications, which are hinted at in tabulation number 9 relating to the 12 signs of the zodiac to be found on page 423. I suppose if we look for 423 here, yeah, we will find this series of interrelated triangles. Yes. Let's see. I think what I'll do is I'll go back here to 423 again. And sorry for this little delay. Okay. Right. So certain major streams, streams of conditioning energies will be seen related to each other and to our Earth, and these fall into two groups. So what I want to do is go to page 423 of Esoteric Astrology. Oh, that's Esoteric Psychology. That won't work. There we go. So, yes, here is the next one, and this is the way that the seven rays are transmitted constellationally and through orthodox and esoteric rulers. Here, for some reason, the hierarchical rulers are not included, although I think they should be, because if an orthodox ruler can receive and transmit a ray which is so unrelated to it, for instance, Mercury transmitting the first ray, then certainly the hierarchical ruler of Aries, like Uranus, should be listed in the transmission of the constellational transmission of the first ray. But I'm sure DK has his reasons for making that list incomplete at that point. So he's going to take these up, and certain major streams of conditioning energies will be seen related to each other and to our Earth, and these fall into two groups. Okay. The ray energies, which we are told emanate from the Great Bear in seven great outraying streams of force. Now, we have to remember that those emanations are not likely to be focal, linear, even cone-like. They're likely to be spherical. And many others, many other worlds, stars, etc., will be receiving the emanations of the Great Bear. You can only imagine the Great Bear will not really look like a Great Bear if we see it somehow head-on from an entirely different perspective in space. We have to realize that what we see as our constellations, even though those star groupings are psychologically and spiritually related to each other, they mean something different to us than to a person who, or to a being, who can see them from a different angle and see that their configuration is different from what we propose because of our angle of vision. So the ray energies, we are told, emanate from the Great Bear in seven great outraying streams of force. And as I've said, it's especially the will aspect of the seven rays which comes from this great first ray center, the Great Bear. And to the extent that the Bear is connected with Aquarius, we can expect some kind of first ray energy coming constellationally through that sign, in addition to the major fifth ray energy noted at this time. So from the Pleiades and from maybe the Sirian system come seven outrange streams of force, either from the Sun, Sirius, from the Sirian system, and certainly I would say from the Little Bear. So we are dividing these in two. Okay. Let's see if I can get this. Certain major streams of conditioning energies will be seen related to each other and to our Earth, and we're studying here the two groups. So the seven energies outraying, nice word from the Great Bear, seven streams of force, the inherent energy of the 12 constellations which blend with the ray energies, producing the essential dualism of manifested life, and incidentally are responsible for the peculiar difficulties confronting humanity on the arc. Is that it? Let's take a look. A-R-E on the something. Okay, let's see. Confronting humanity. On the ARE of experience. That looks like a typo. I say on the arc of evolutionary experience upon our planet. That's what I'd say this is. It'll be years and years and years before we catch all the typos as they are found in this book and in others of the books, but we certainly have the early groups did a brilliant job of proofreading, and we have, I think, very clean, relatively, presentations of what the Tibetan dictated. So the seven great streams of outraying force are inherently different from and blend with the inherent energies of the 12 constellations. Themselves, I suppose, a blend, because there are a number of stars that have to blend their solar logoic radiation together to produce the overall constellational radiation. Whatever may be the rays of the individual solar logoi, blended together, they have to somehow express the ray or rays which condition the entire zodiacal constellation. So the dualism of manifested life, I wonder how he's going to treat this, soul and personality, or spirit and matter. And this blending of rays, this is what he's saying, the blending of rays and zodiacal energies is responsible for the peculiar difficulties confronting humanity on the arc of evolutionary experience. So let's just say, okay, whoop, that's not it. That's not right. Here, humanity's difficulties are caused in part by the blending of the ray energies and the zodiacal energies. And here it seems that the zodiac is in a way taking up the second aspect, whereas the rays are taking up the first aspect. We have to see whether there is a follow-through on that type of apparent differentiation. Again, I would repeat that what I shall have to say will be related to present world conditions. What is the present? It, you know, in a way, from the perspective of a master, it may last a long time. Present, I mean, we're dealing with the individuals who can see in the eternal now and perhaps present has very much to do with the ending of that 250,000-year cycle, which seems to have started a whole new dispensation with the coming of the Christ for humanity. So anyway, what he's going to say will be related to present world conditions, to humanity, and also for practical teaching and application to the life of the individual disciple. Because whatever is, after all, related to ourselves, we do somehow manage to remember in greater measure. Now, I have to again go over here to make sure that my other computer doesn't turn off and postpone it just a little bit. Necessarily, these energies have a cosmic, systemic, and planetary significance. Yeah, I do want to really correct myself. At one point in an earlier paragraph, when the word systemic was offered, I talked about it on the planetary level, but I see that it really is the solar logoic level. And if the planets are to be included, they are to be included only as chakric expressions of the main life, which is the solar logos. So we have a threefold level, cosmic, planet, systemic, and planetary, and the three rays of aspect are the ones here represented, because cosmic significance is that of the first ray, systemic of the second ray, and planetary of the first ray in this particular context. So necessarily, these energies, these 18, I suppose, have a cosmic, systemic, and planetary significance, but these no disciple can as yet grasp. The veil has been thrown over the planetary lore, we have been told. A personality has to be transcended before even the earlier stages of the understanding of these mysteries becomes possible. So there are very few where that transcendence has occurred, and basically ending the ancient domination of the threefold personality, a matter of the third degree. And this transcendence is something you have not yet accomplished, okay, not yet third degree initiates, but which someday inevitably you will. And may the time not be too far removed for all who read these words, because initiates of the third degree are certainly much needed for their unity of vision, and initiates of the fourth for their sacrificial will, and of the fifth for that which they can reveal in their mastery of the three lower worlds. Once man is impersonal and free of the reactions of the lower self, and again, this is more of a third degree factor, in becoming increasingly so as the fourth degree is approached. So once man is impersonal and free from the reactions of the lower self, and his consciousness is illumined, there's the word, by the clear light of the intuition, so we're talking about the third and fourth degree, then his window of vision becomes clarified, and his sight into reality, you know, by the cosmic ethers is unimpeded. Well, you know, on the cosmic physical plane, you wonder how unimpeded any sight can be, but certainly when compared with the sight we have at present, very much through a glass darkly, it would appear to be unimpeded vision. Obstructions always erected by humanity itself, we might say by the exercise of its own faculties, are removed, and he sees all life and form in their true relation, and can comprehend and even occultly see the passage of the energies. The passage of the energies discussed in the Capricorn chapter. So comprehending comes first, and actually higher psychic seeing of the passage of the energies is hinted at by Master DK. And it must be a great reward for having piece by piece studied these various energies and their relations to at least some other factors. So we have this division into two groups, the ray energies from the Great Bear and the zodiacal energies. Now, in a way, we're talking about the head center or the head structure of the one about whom naught may be said. We're talking about seven head energies or head centers within the head of the one about whom naught may be said. And we are also speaking of the heart and the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. Now, how is this impersonality to be achieved? Once a man is impersonal and free from the reactions of the lower self, it's the real impersonality begins on the higher mental plane when at the third degree one is really focused on that particular plane and open to the clear light, the clear cold light of the intuition. And then there is a clarification from glamour and from illusion. And he sees into the cosmic ethers, or at least with the sight of the cosmic ethers, he sees in the lower three worlds, and reality becomes something real to him. Whereas while we are in the thrall of glamour and illusion, we may think we are seeing reality, but we don't. So in this Sirian moment at the third degree and beyond, impersonality begins. Actually, I think impersonality begins in the triad. I like to call it suprapersonality, beginning in the causal vehicle, because it still has the elevated and refined personal content stored as quality. It's built up on personal effort, of course, substanded by the energy inflows of the triad and monad, and aided by the master. But it is built of content taken from the quarries of life in the lower three worlds. So obstructions always erected by humanity itself. Well, not erected by God, although there are the etheric webs which are protective and may seem like obstructions at first. They do seem to be structural, these etheric webs, and meant to protect the consciousness within the physical body until it can handle what can come through from the subtle planes, especially the astral plane. Obstructions always erected by humanity itself are removed, and he sees life and form, because he's also looking in the three lower worlds, in their true relation, and can comprehend. So that's spirit and matter in a way, or spirit and form. Life is, after all, the life aspect is the spirit aspect, but maybe DK means something more general, just the living process. He sees all life and form in their true relation and can comprehend and even occultly see the passage of the energies. I just love that phrase, this marvelous phrase. And if we, there's maybe one word astounded, and there it is. It's the word is astounded, not astonished. But it has been coldly said. Well, here we have, maybe I'll begin reading a little earlier. From the above, a few points, hints can be gathered together as to the interlocking forces of all the 12 constellations, as they pour into and through all the kingdoms in nature, carrying with them not only their own individual potencies, but also those of the seven rays, which, after all, are transmitted constellationally through them, focused with the sacred and non-sacred planets, which rule them, and discovered and undiscovered planetary lives, which the undiscovered, of course, we have no notion of, except maybe for those few pioneers who are writing on that subject, like Charles Jayne's book, The Undiscovered Planets, taking from those who sought to go beyond psychically mathematically, astronomically, and astrologically, it has been occultly said that a vision of these powers, and their many weaving lines seen as rivers and streams of light, is given to the initiate from the mountaintop of Capricorn once that summit has been reached. It is at the Transfiguration initiation that this vision appears before the eyes of the astounded disciple. And, of course, he's still a disciple, isn't he? He's an initiate, and sometimes there is a discrimination made between the one who is initiate and the one who is disciple, but here he's still considered a disciple. Even Sanat Kumara is in his own way a disciple of the Solar Logos, as is his emanatory prototype, the Planetary Logos. The great experiences upon the various mountaintops are, as related in the Bible, have all to do with Capricorn. Moses, the lawgiver on Mount Sinai, probably Moses, a Capricorn, and with strong Aries, I suspect, is Saturn in Capricorn imposing the law of karma upon the people. Well, there are some amazing things said here, and we know we went through these many programs ago, but always our commentary could be enriched by new thoughts that come in response to what we read. So we would say, go to page, go to page 167 in Esoteric Astrology, Capricorn chapter. The relationship of certain rays and cosmic triangles may become clearer to you if the following tabulation is studied with care. I really wonder whether I emphasized enough this particular. I'd like to read this 18-fold chart, 3-fold, 6-fold, 18-fold. Great Bear Leo, Leo being so closely related to Aries, which the Great Bear additionally works, Saturn, which is usually considered to be in detriment in Leo, but has a special relationship to it along the first ray line, and Sanat, of course, is Saturn in a way, and the Ancient of Days is connected with Capricorn and with Saturn and with age. Saturn is a planet then deeply connected with Sanat Kumara and with the first ray from this perspective. And then the planetary head center, which is Shambhala. So Saturn has a direct impact upon the planetary head center. And from thence to the disciple's head center, although there are many transformations, I suppose, along the way, but one day the disciple's head center will be the receiving mechanism for energies from Shambhala, I suppose from the Logoic plane, where Leo can be seen as the sea of fire. You know, we could begin, I wonder what would happen if we began with Leo. Where would we end up? Leo, well, we do, in fact. We end up with Aquarius. That's where the table of hierarchies takes us. If you know what I'm saying here, we go to the table of hierarchies with these very useful charts. And here is the table of hierarchies, table of creative hierarchies. And notice that he begins with Leo. That fits really well, doesn't it? Because Shambhala, the uppermost part of Shambhala, is found on the Logoic plane, which is ruled by Leo. Then Saturn takes us into Shambhala from there, being a planet which has much of the first ray and being one of the synthesizing planets. So Shambhala is a center of synthesis, is related, and I suppose in a way the atmic plane is involved, and then to the base of the spine. There are fiery energies in Leo. Hence one experiences fiery pain. Then let's move over here next to the second ray, which begins with Sirius. The star Sirius seems like such a small source compared to the Great Bear of the Pleiades. But suppose it is our seven solar systems are included somehow. It's a bit on the, it seems to be more the sixth ray which would be connected with our particular seven solar systems and with the energy of desire. Sirius, Pisces, which brings in both ray 2 and ray 6, and then that amazing Uranian connection which has to do with the heart and with the life aspect. But as I said, since hierarchy is involved, the Pisces-Aquarius hierarchy in a way, well, why do I say Pisces? Because in a way the strongest of the most ultimate of the second ray signs is Pisces. It's the cosmic decanate of the second ray. So in Pisces Aquarius, we achieve the final initiations. And Uranus is the ruler of Aquarius, which rules the hierarchy in general. So it fits because we're dealing with the planetary heart center. And the Christ, who is at the head of hierarchy, is by all means a Piscean initiate in the larger sense, not just related to the age of Pisces. Maybe somehow, not knowing when that great 25,000-year age of Pisces will end, perhaps the Christ is somehow summarizing in himself the fruit of that great age. Will it be soon? Will it be imminent that the new age of Aquarius begins, or will that be somewhat deferred? He says, our science, our mathematics is not adequate. Anyway, we descend to the human heart center, of course, and to the solar plexus. It's kind of a second initiation, fourth initiation line, as I've said before, whereas this the Mercury descent is kind of first initiation, third initiation. Then we come to, of course, the Pleiades, which have a special connection in this case with Capricorn, which delivers the third aspect of divinity to disciples. Whereas Cancer, remember that triangle of Pleiades, Cancer, Venus, delivers the third aspect to average humanity. Mercury is the ruler of the final decanate of Capricorn, but along with it we will have Vulcan and the Sun, which give us that tremendous blaze of transfigurative glory at that point. Mercury will be connected with the planetary action center, so let Mercury speed the group upon the upward way. Let Taurus bring illumination and the attainment of the vision. This is rule 12, let the group serve as Aquarius indicates. Let Mercury speed the group upon the upward way. Let Taurus bring illumination and the attainment of the vision. Let the mark of the Savior as the group toils in Pisces be seen above the aura of the group. Mercury being Buddha, sometimes the name for Mercury, is very closely related to Buddha, who is connected with the new group of world servers. New group of world servers and Buddha are ruled by Mercury, in a sense. Of course, Taurus is the main ruler here, but Mercury is very strong in relation to Taurus because it's the illuminator. It's not one of the rulers, but the Buddha, being archetypally Mercurian as the emissary from Shambhala to hierarchy, and probably because monadically he may come from that planet, just a speculation, an outreaching, a possibility, just like the Tibetan in that respect. The Tibetan seems more Mercurian to me than Venusian. Of course, I stand to be corrected at some point, and I offer thoughts, and hopefully these thoughts lead people in a good direction rather than confuse them. There's some speculations, I can only say these are speculations. Then the planetary Ajna center. So eventually the new group of world servers will, in a sense, take the place of the Buddha as an intermediary. But it's an intermediary, in this case, between hierarchy and humanity, whereas the Buddha is the intermediary between Shambhala and hierarchy. But perhaps when the hierarchy becomes shambolically infused, it will not need an intermediary. already the New Group of World Servers is doing this kind of work, this kind of function. Then to the Human Disciples Action Center, which is potent at the third degree, and to the Throat Center, eventually ruled by Saturn and even by the seventh ray and Uranus, when the initiatory status is reached. So it pays to study this kind of chart horizontally and vertically, because different connections appear, and that's what we want. We want the connections which made bring forth a flash of illumination. I'm a little bit late there on that other computer. Oops. Probably a few minutes there, not recorded as a backup. Well, anyway, I wanted to spend a little more time on that. And then we're talking about moving into the impersonal energies. Okay. The relationship of certain rays and cosmic triangles may become clearer to you if the following tabulation is studied with care. It's one that many of us interested in esoteric astrology have memorized. You have to memorize to a certain extent, you know. It may be the old rote way of learning. What is useless is memorization that does not lead to further correlation. If we just store the nuggets of knowledge, so to speak, and don't do anything with them, then they're just a burden, aren't they? But if we have them at our fingertips through memorization, then we're in a much better position to proceed rapidly upon the way with our task of reuniting the various parts of cosmos which have become at least separated in consciousness. Note, the seven stars of the Great Bear are the originating sources of the seven rays of our solar system. Well, you know, they're septenates all the way up. And if you look at this coming particular chart, which is Cosmic Parabrahm. You'll see that septenates really go all the way up to the, in a sense, to the top of the universe. At least we can extrapolate this chart that far. There are always septenates, and every seven becomes a one. If anyone has ever wondered about the relation of seven and one, just look at this chart. This seven is the concrete expression of the first ray. So there are resolutions of seven always into one. So much seems to come forth manifestationally from the third aspect of divinity when one looks at this chart. The cross is there, the cross of manifestation, and the three and four are together because of the circled cross in the third position. Well, it's an excellent chart, and I think earlier, well, I don't know, did we discuss it in our astrology? I know I discussed it rather extensively here and there in Cosmic Fire, and still have 100 pages to go in Cosmic Fire, which, most of which I've written about. But I'm much more inclined to speak it at this point, because sometimes I think the intuition works a little better with speech. The seven rishis, as they are called, of the Great Bear, expressed through the medium of the seven planetary logoi, who are their representatives and to whom they stand in relation of a cosmic prototype. And I'm wondering, what about expressing through the seven solar logoi, who are part of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one? Because, again, we have the relationship of spirit, soul, and personality, our body, and the planetary deities are in the relation of body to the monadic prototype of a rishi of the seven of the Great Bear. And what about the solar logoi who stand in between? For instance, it's just a speculation, but Suppose we take Alcor Mizar, that dual second-ray star in the tail of the Great Bear, and descend to our solar logos, and from thence to Jupiter. That would be a connection. Because monadically, I do feel our solar logos is on the second ray. Well, certainly in his soul, he is. And maybe different connections would be made at different times of solar logoic or planetary development. Maybe the soul development is what we're talking about. We have a soul on the second ray here for the sun, solar logos, and a soul for Jupiter on the second ray, so there would be a connection with a prototype in the Great Bear. Not just from star 2 in the Great Bear to Jupiter, but including an intermediary, a solar intermediary. Well, for this we would have to, you know, with Sirius, it's kind of the head of the whole seven solar systems of which ours is one, and it's got a direct connection to Venus. Would this be via the fifth ray of Dubé being a fifth ray star? We don't know in what sense, whether soul or monad, you know, it just conveys the fifth ray. It's got a lot of Leo connections, so hence the connection with Sirius. What about Dubé, Sirius, and Venus? What about that? But what really is the first ray star in our seven solar systems, of which ours is one? Our sun is the second ray star, but Sirius is not only fifth ray. In relation to those seven, it has maybe a head center function, maybe. Although there's some uncertainty as to what those seven stars are. There are theories about it. You know, if we go to Alpha Centauri, because it's in the center, it might have something to do with the sacral center. And it's also possible that Procyon should take the role of the Agnus center, as it's always forward-looking and rapid, following the vision with rapidity. Is there a base of the spine star? What about, you know, we're looking also at Vega. We're looking at Altair. These are stars that Nicholas and I have felt could be members. If we look at Fomalo, is it close enough? Is it a solar plexus star? If it is, would it be connected then with Merak, which is a sixth ray, a star in the Great Bear? And so would Merak leading to Fomalo, leading to Neptune, be a possibility? I don't want to get too definite about how these triangles should be followed, but I do want to say that one could follow them and include a solar logoic part to it. And I think there would be, then we would not be leaving out one level. So what we'll do here is we'll say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 113C, page 422, and beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure 114, page 422.